Welcome to The Detail. I am your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5, LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Elections are upon us. We're reaching out to candidates and asking them to join us. With me today is Derek Reich. Am I saying your name correctly, Derek?
It's Rich, but it
Oh,
honestly
I'm
doesn't
sorry.
really matter.
I'm getting
No, it
everybody's
really doesn't
name.
matter.
Well, okay, Derek Rich. So, Derek, you are running for the state house. You're running for the legislature. And
That is
which
correct.
district is it exactly?
So it is 73 now. It goes from the
Okay.
city of Venice, hugging the coast, all the way to Sarasota International, Longboat Key, Siesta Key, the entire city of Sarasota.
Okay, cool. So, all right. And you are running against
Fiona
Fiona
McFarland.
McFarland. She is the incumbent. We're reaching out to Fiona, and we'll give her time, if she accepts and would like to come on the show. Derek, there's so much going on in the state of Florida right now. I don't think that there's ever been a more critical time, a controversial time. I know you're a teacher, and I know that had something to do with why you chose to run. So can you tell me, when did you decide? Because I assume your life is just fine being a teacher. Obviously, you don't need this job, so to speak. But what prompted you to decide to run for public office in the state legislature?
So let me just preface this by saying I'm a Sarasota County native. I was born and
Okay.
raised in Sarasota County. I spent every single minute of my K-12 education in Sarasota County schools. And it allowed our school system allowed me to be the first person to go and get a bachelor's and then a master's degree in my family. So a public school system, an A-rated public school system, changed my life. And that's why I decided to become a teacher, and that's why I teach at Sarasota High School. And I was sitting in my classroom on my lunch break in April, and I was reading about how, and obviously I knew Fiona McFarland voted to cut $12 million from Sarasota County schools in Florida, the Florida House record budget, because we had a mask mandate for 3 weeks. And I knew that previously, but I was sitting in my classroom in April on my lunch break, and it's funny, I was just scrolling through Twitter, and I clicked on a Florida politics article that said Fiona McFarland had no opponent. And this is the closest House district in the entire state of Florida. Trump and Biden tied it at 49%, and two of the three Democratic school board candidates won this district, even though they lost countywide. And I was sitting there, and honestly, I got very angry because my classroom, we don't have enough laptops. We half of our English department at Sarasota High School last year were subs. We can't find teachers. Our students are suffering as a result. And the public school system that gave me my American dream, you had someone vote to cut money from it. And as someone who is a working class person who grew up in a working class family with a single mother of four, when she decided to cut $12 million from our school system, you can hear my voice. I'm emotional about it because you're really taking away the American dream. The greatest equalizer in our country is an education. And by and large, the people who are in our public schools more often than not are working class kids. And it was like she was coming after me and the school system that gave me my American dream. And I just found, that completely unacceptable.
Yeah, and I would refresh the audience's memories. So the mask mandate in Sarasota County, which is a public health issue. The bulk of my career was spent in the healthcare arena, and this was during the height of the Delta COVID wave. It was the most deadly period in Sarasota, in Florida. When it comes to COVID death, we did not have the vaccines yet, or they were starting actually to come on board, but the Delta wave was happening. So she was not the only state legislator that represents Sarasota and Manatee County who voted to punish Sarasota County schools by withholding $12 million in funding. There were three others, and I believe they were Will Robinson, Tommy Gregory and James Buchanan joined Fiona McFarlane in punishing what I perceive to be a responsible decision to protect people. During that time in the school system, you teach at Sarasota High School. Weren't some teachers lost? One of the coaches there died of COVID?
Yes, unfortunately. And can I just add that, you know, fortunately that didn't pass in the Senate and overall, but, and it's not me attacking her. I'm going to quote Joe Gruters, okay? The GOP chairman, who is our state senator, who is also chair of the Senate Education Committee. Quote, "There is no way to cut a portion of the education budget and expect it not to impact student education. A $12 million cut to education funding in Sarasota County would hurt children in Sarasota County. It would also send the message that their education is worth less than the education of students in surrounding districts. It is a bad idea and bad policy," quote unquote. And that is Republican GOP Chairman Joe Gruters. Mm-hmm. And it basically comes down to, do you believe you should have a representative that will go to Tallahassee and vote to take away your tax dollars and give them to other school districts? And I just think that's irresponsible.
Yeah. So Derek, I'm going to backtrack. I usually ask people to tell me a little bit about their background, and I want to come back to education. A native Sarasotan is a relatively rare thing. Did you study education, or what did you do anything before teaching? What do you want people to know about your background?
So obviously, like I said, I grew up here. I grew up in Venice in Northport, and you know, I graduated from Northport High School. I was born in Sarasota, and I decided, because of the education that I had, and I had teachers that really did change my life. And I was sitting there and I'm thinking, you know, how can I give back to these people that really did impact my life and change my life? So I decided to go to Florida State University, where I earned a bachelor's and a master's degree in education, to give back to the next generation as the previous generation had given back to me.
Yeah. Okay. Education. And I think it's fair to say that most teachers don't become teachers because they're wanting to become rich. You know, yeah. I think it's a calling. I have family members who are teachers, and it always, when I talk to my sister, I say, you know, at the end of the day, a teacher never has to wonder if what they did at work mattered. You know, it matters every single day. You really are making a difference every single day for young people. But boy, education has taken center stage in a way that I'd say a lot of people would say it's been politicized, and oh gosh, maybe, you know, our school board meetings in Sarasota County have become pretty tough. As an educator in the state legislature, how do you think that experience will shape your service or your goals for what you'd like to accomplish?
I think a lot of what is missing in the legislature, is expertise, specifically in education. You know, we have a lot of lawyers, we have a lot of doctors, and we don't have any public school teachers. Even when the legislature is trying to accomplish a positive goal, and you know, nowadays I don't really think a lot of their things are positive, but mm-hmm. even when they're trying to accomplish something positive, you know, a lot of things that look good on paper don't always work out. And having that practical experience to go up to my fellow colleagues and tell them, hey, I know what you're trying to do, but it won't work for X or Y or Z. That is the expertise that we need to actually have in Tallahassee, not another lawyer, another doctor, another business person. All those professions are incredibly important, but mm-hmm. we need to have expertise in other fields.
Yeah. So kind of a boots on the ground, practical understanding of Absolutely. Education. What has it been like? I mean, there's so many things that are touching education policy, whether it's, you know, common sense gun restrictions, whether, you know, masking policies, although COVID is, you know, it's we have great tools now. The legislation that the state legislature brought through around CRT, and, you know, don't say gay. Do you have any comment about those larger issues? And I know that's a lot to, you know, we could talk about each one. What would you have liked to see from the legislature?
I would have liked to actually see some caring about public education. And this is where it comes to having some level of knowledge, because if these legislators talk to any teacher, they would have told you it's been on the books forever. If a parent has ever been uncomfortable with an assignment, with a book, they can opt their child out of it and get an alternative assignment. And, mm-hmm. you know, the quote unquote parental rights bill that the governor likes to tout all the time. Look, I have a 16 and 17 year old brother and sister that go to school in this district at Northport High School. And we've had to remove all of our books out of our classroom, and they can't be brought in until they're certified by a library specialist. And he touts that as freedom. He took the choice away from my mother to decide what books her children can read at Northport High School. And I don't know about you, but having another parent or having the government make the decision on what your child's going to read, that is not freedom. Every parent individually should decide what their child wants to read. And I really don't think it's that insane to let the parent decide, not another parent decide mm-hmm. for you, not the government, not a politician, but you decide. And that's what I'm going to advocate for in the legislature.
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting talking about that because, you know, I wasn't aware what the picture that you're painting is that the library was actually kind of denuded of book, like they took books out of the library and now they have to, on a piecemeal basis, yep. approve them back into the library. Because it seemed to me that whatever the controversial books might be, most of them ought to be just fine, right? It would seem more efficient to take things that people might find to be controversial. It really, there shouldn't be that many. But what you're telling me is it's been basically kind of vacated of literature, and now it's being, what kind of, you talk about bureaucratic overreach and making things more complicated, which theoretically you've got a governor who wants smaller government, less intrusion in our lives. That seems like the most highly inefficient way to go at this, even if you agree with it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not just that. You know, if I want to call someone whose name is Jonathan, I'm not going to give a specific student. I guess I can't do that. But if I wanted to call a student named Jonathan, John, because that's different than his official name on his birth certificate, I literally have to send a permission slip home to get signed. Now, I don't know about you, but go find someone that says, you know what, I want to fill out more government forms and have the government more involved in my life. And it's government overreach. They say that, you know, we want to get government out of your lives as they control a woman's right to choose and control her own body, as they decide what they're going to read, what they're going to allow your child to read instead of you letting them read. And now names, you know, if I want to call one of my students named Jonathan John, I have to get a permission slip signed at home. It's literally insane.
Wow. And some of these kids aren't so great about returning permission slips.
Right? Yeah, like, I'm just trying. I'm just trying to get them to turn in their homework. My goodness, let alone getting a permission slip signed.
Yeah, like the, you know, it sends actually a bad message to kids because they know, they're like, this doesn't make any sense. I mean, my first name is Catherine, but I go by Kathy, so I totally hear how that would really make a lot of make work. A lot of things that detract from education. Well, let's talk about the environment. You know, here in Sarasota County, when you look at Piney Point and the, you know, they call these things spills, but honestly, Piney Point is a phosphogypsum retention series. There's two huge retention ponds on top of a stack of phosphate mining waste. And they have these ponds on top so that the water, the rainwater doesn't filter through and get horrible, you know, byproducts into the aquifer, right? That's the intention of these ponds, but they become contaminated. And it was in 2021, in the spring of 2021, there was, you know, a breach of the liners. But honestly, you know, in talking with environmentalists, Minnesota 88, Suncoast Waterkeepers, the problem with this storage system, it's really difficult to keep it, you know, the integrity of those ponds. And it's devastating to our waters. And we've seen a lot of water issues with inadequate infrastructure for county development, you know, almost 1 billion gallons of effluent over years since 2013 was spilling into Philippi Creek. The 2018 red tide, summer of red tide was devastating. There were some local restaurants that couldn't stay open. No one was going out, and summer's tough anyway. That's a tough problem, you know, addressing these gypsum stacks and the phosphate mining industry. Between that and, you know, I'm interested in your other environmental issues. What is your take on where the state needs to go?
Well, you know, former governor and future governor Crist, he will tell you, when I've talked to him and I've talked to people on his team, I'm very close with former state representative Keith Fitzgerald, who's very close with former and future governor Crist. You know, he will tell you that when he came into governor to be governor for the first time, he told everyone in the state, look, I'm not looking to create any new laws, but I want you to enforce the water quality laws we have on the books. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, specifically in Charlotte County, one of the major rivers in Charlotte County actually started to look like a river again a few months into his governorship. So it's not like we don't have the laws there. We're just not enforcing them, because by and large, a lot of our legislators are bought and paid for by people that don't care about water quality. And, you know, one of the promises that my opponent ran on was water quality in the environment. And literally a few months into her term in Tallahassee, you have one of the most devastating environmental disasters this part of Florida has seen in a very long time. And
that
then
tiny
she
point. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then she went on to vote against to eliminate net metering. And it's like, if you truly care about the environment, you know, why are you taking away the incentive for people to put solar panels on their home? Mm-hmm. And it's an all-encompassing approach. You know, I would love there to be one way to fix everything, but there's not one way. We have to make sure people feel like they can have an incentive to put solar panels on their home. We need to actually enforce our water quality laws. We need to also encourage people to do the right thing. You know, I'm not someone for overbearing government. I am a Democrat, but I'm a conservative Democrat. I really don't want government involved in your life unless it's absolutely needed. And this really goes on us as citizens. You need to decide at home who's listening. Do you care enough about the environment to be careful about what you do on your own property to make sure it doesn't go into our bay and into our beaches? And it really is on all of us in an all-encompassing approach.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned solar power, and I did a show because the state legislature had passed, and, you know, some pretty devastating legislation that would have killed the solar industry in Florida. And it was Governor DeSantis did veto it, but it was kind of shocking to me that it got that far. You know, that it was actually potentially going to happen, that they were going to remove incentives or make it harder to put solar panels and participate in the grid. I think that's what it was. So, yeah, it seems like there's a lot of room for improvement with the environment. And to your point, I know Suncoast Waterkeepers, it wasn't until they moved to sue Sarasota County, they said, well, you know, we're going to do this. We want you to come into compliance with the Clean Water Act, right? You have to have enough infrastructure for the sewage for all this development, which they hadn't kept up with. So, it's a good point. I guess if, you know, we actually do see a lot of good policy that gets ignored. And that's probably the worst situation, when you have policies that are good, and so the public thinks the problem's taken care of, but if you don't enforce them,
correct,
they're useless. You know, they don't matter. A lot of people are concerned about democracy in Florida, and we've seen, you know, recently in our own local Republican Party, Mike Flynn and two Proud Boys are precinct captains. Governor DeSantis has instituted elections police, which, after what he termed was the most successful, transparent election ever in Florida, in the 2020 election. And let's face it, you know, it went well for his team, for his side, but then he institutes this elections police squad. I'm not even clear on what it is they're really going to do. What do you see as the role of the state legislature in, you know, doing what it can to protect democracy, and, you know, voting restrictions also come under this umbrella as well. What's your take on what's going on? Are you okay with it? Do you think the state legislators need to do something different?
Yeah, I think they actually need to listen to the voters. When you look at the amendment we passed in 2018 to allow felons to vote, they did everything possible that, yeah, we had to, you know, put it into the Constitution, but mm-hmm. they tried to change it as much as possible, started adding on, you have to pay all these fines, pay all the... So the legislature acts as almost an anti-democratic form, where they take what the voters in this state want and they try to do everything possible to make mm-hmm. sure it doesn't actually get enacted. And just following the will of the voters is what we need to do. And that is simply not what this state has been doing recently. Like you just pointed out, we're now making it unclear whether former felons can vote. And then if they make a mistake, I got you, you're going to go to prison for years. You know, mm-hmm. not making these things clear is exactly what they want. And it's a waste of taxpayer money to spend all of this money. And look, I make $55,000 a year. I mm-hmm. pay more than $11,000 total in all my taxes. Wow. That's a lot of money for mm-hmm. someone who's making $55,000 a year. And I don't like it. Yeah. I don't like it when the federal government in DC or Tallahassee, our state government, just burns my taxpayer money that I work really, really hard on. And you are seeing that done not only with the, you know, legislature and the governor enacting their own election police that is really going to be a waste of money, because as you just said, he himself said it was an incredibly successful election. But you see it when yeah. it comes with immigration and wasting $12 million flying refugees from one part of the country to another. It's just mm-hmm. a waste of taxpayer dollars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just to be clear, that was the 2018 constitutional amendment that Florida voters passed to have felons who had paid their debt to society, you know, their sentences were finished and, you know, they had been released, to be restored as full citizens. That was the deal. And to your point, one of the things that was imposed were, it's kind of like a poll tax. They put all kinds of fees. Yep. And if your fees were not, you know, if they hadn't been paid, we don't do that with other government fees, but for these folks, they wanted to keep them from voting. You mentioned what recently, you know, migrants and flying. These are people from Venezuela who were in Texas, and the governor sent a plane to get them, have them be in Florida for like 45 minutes, and then flew them up to Martha's Vineyard. I'm curious, what is your take on issues with immigration in Florida with the governor's approach? What do you see the state legislature's role in, you know, addressing immigration concerns?
So as someone that teaches government, I will tell you that this is not the role of the state. The federal government is explicitly in charge of dealing with immigration. And you have Tallahassee and the governor deciding, you know what, I'm going to waste $12 million of your hard-earned money. If you're listening to this at home and you're like myself, I'm not rich, and I'm sure many of us are not rich at home. You work very hard for your money, and you have the governor just burning $12 million. And, you know, I teach a bunch of students that are here that are asylum seekers from Venezuela. And when you ask every single one of them, because I like to ask my students this every single time, I'm saying, like, how are you guys applying for asylum? And it's, my family owned a business, and the government came after my family because we owned a business. And you think someone who claims to love capitalism in Tallahassee would actually get behind these people that are fleeing socialism and communism because they owned a private business? And you think the governor would actually like those people, but it just goes to show you, he doesn't believe in any of those policies. It is just word of mouth. You know, my grandparents have owned a small business in the city of Venice for nearly 40 years. They're one of the longest serving members of the Venice Chamber of Commerce. And I don't know about you, but I support small businesses, and anyone fleeing a country because they just wanted to have a small business is always welcome in my country.
You know, it's ironic because Governor DeSantis has instituted the day before Election Day, and I believe this is going to be taught in Sarasota in public schools all across the state, Victims of Communism Day, right? So he's, you know, here it is. Communism is not something we embrace in the United States, and the governor wants to educate our students about the victimization of communist regimes, that, you know, what they inflict on people. But yet, when the victims come to the United States, this is how he treats them. It's pretty, I mean, you can't make it up. It's there's no, it's like the right hand doesn't know what the left's doing, or is this just about political drama instead of an actual principle, you know?
Absolutely.
Because if it had that principle, why would you do that too? Because it's basically, this is what was happening to Cuban families when Castro took over.
Absolutely.
Pretty much the
And
same thing.
if you're Cuban, how would you feel if this country, if Florida did this to you during the various times where Castro just let people leave the island? How would you feel if we had a governor at that time that did that to your family?
No, it's pretty crazy. We've seen with this particular legislature, there are certain principles, you know, we've noticed, I in my reporting, there's dynamics with ghost candidates in the state of Florida. These are sham candidates who are funded. Their funding is dark money or of strange origin. They don't actually really want, you know, they're basically recruited to run. One guy was a really had a similar name to the incumbent. This was in Miami. And it appears that spoiler candidates really change the outcomes. Going back to the year 2000, where Ralph Nader definitely created a disruption in the 2000 election. So ranked choice voting, which is being utilized in certain states and certain cities, is a way for voters actually get to choose one, two. They get to, if there's three candidates, they choose their first choice, their second, and their third. So it actually eliminates the spoiler effect and allows people to register their level of enthusiasm. It's not a winner take all or nothing. It's, you know, these are my preferences. And so the candidate with the most number ones and twos is the one, you know, that prevails. Or you could think of it, the one with the least support is eliminated, and then the least support, it goes on like that. This has really changed the dynamics of races. And The most recent state legislature, and, you know, full disclosure, I serve on the advisory board for Rank My Vote Florida. So I believe in ranked choice voting. And I think it's also a way where the all or nothing approach, we tend to wind up with more extreme choices, which don't really reflect the values of the electorate. They have outlawed in the last session ranked choice voting in Florida. Is this something, I mean, where would you stand on that? And, you know, is this kind of a new issue for you, or are you familiar with it? What's your take on, take that anywhere you want, on how things are done in Florida and the state legislature?
Yeah, I mean, we saw it in Alaska. My only, I'm open-minded. I am willing to sit down and look at it. I haven't really fully formed an opinion. One of my major concerns, and I see this as a government teacher, is we really have a hard time right now getting people to acknowledge who got the most votes. And when you look at in Alaska, it did take them a long time to filter that process down.
It doesn't happen on election night. It takes time.
Correct.
It does.
And that is my biggest concern. If we didn't have such a large minority of people that simply didn't believe in democracy anymore and won't acknowledge that they, you know, the election is real if they lose. They simply won't acknowledge that. My only concern is making sure that our voters are educated that A, this process takes some time, and B, this is how it's done. And I'm not against it, but, and I'm open to exploring it, but I think we need to have a more efficient ones and twos process so it doesn't take as much time, so that people have more confidence and they understand it. And I think that all comes with education and time. So I'm not against it, but I just want people to care about, you know, democracy and acknowledge it right now. And as a moderate, I do appreciate that it does eliminate the extremes, but I think it's something that we just need more time and more education on as voters.
Sure, fair enough. Well, if you just join me, I am talking here with Derek Rich. Derek is running for the state legislature, and you're going to have to tell me again, District 73, is that right?
That is correct. That is
correct. Okay, District 73, and that's from Venice on up to the city of Sarasota, all the way up to the airport, is that right?
Yep, county line.
All right. And so voters must register by Tuesday, October 11th to vote in the November 8th general election, which includes the race for U.S. Senate, Florida governor, state legislature, as well as county and city offices. Early voting begins October 24th and continues through November 6th. All requests for a vote by mail ballot must be received no later than 5 p.m. on October 29th to allow ample time for mailing and return. Guidelines for requesting vote-by-mail ballots and registration are available at sarasotavotes.gov and votemanatee.gov. And you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5, LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Again, my guest is Derek Rich. He is running for the state legislature, the House, District 73. I'm curious, Derek, are there going to be debates, or there's already been one debate? Is that right? Okay.
That is correct.
Okay. How would you distinguish yourself from your opponent? I mean, you've had one debate. What would you say are some key distinctions?
So the first off is at that debate, if you know anyone who was at that debate or connected with Tiger Bay, ask around and see how it went between myself and my opponent. One of us did the homework and the other one didn't. One didn't remember her own votes. And like I said, as a teacher, I make sure to do my homework. I read and memorized the budget and did pretty well by all reviews. But the thing that really does differentiate both of us as candidates is I was born and raised here. I'm a working person. So when we talk about affordable housing, and one of my biggest priorities when I get elected this November is to actually fully fund the Sadowski Affordable Housing Fund. Over the last 18 years, Tallahassee politicians have raided the Affordable Housing Fund and used it for other things rather than building affordable housing. And you see this manifesting today. I'm a teacher. So the same struggle that many of you listening are having, I'm having it myself. And having someone that's on the ground, I'm not a millionaire. You know, I didn't inherit tons of money. That, not that there's anything wrong with that. That's the American dream. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I go through the struggle that many of you are going through yourself. You know, I'm not some legislator in Tallahassee who doesn't understand and live the problems you have every day. And that's the difference between Fiona and myself. Mm-hmm. I live through the problems that you have. She can provide you empathy, but she doesn't live through them every day like I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of one of those everyday problems, Floridians are dealing with significant increases in their homeowners insurance. And of course, you know, this for people on fixed incomes or just any family, even if you're doing well, that can really hurt. What do you see? What do you think the legislature should be doing? We do have this state, you know, citizens insurance company is like an insurer of last resort. But, you know, with climate change, storms that are happening, the cost of insurance is becoming a real problem.
Absolutely. And there was a special session in May and nothing, they were supposed to improve the system. And nothing improved. They gave a handout worth billions of dollars to insurance companies and they continued to raise rates. In fact, after that special session, my mother had her policy canceled and it is actually up later this week and she's scrambling to try to figure out what to do in the middle of hurricane season. And so this is a problem that, like I said just a minute ago, it hits home because I'm living through it through my mother. And a lot of this comes down to when Governor Crist was in office, he really built up citizens to be something not of last resort, but of something that really did compete with insurers. Mm-hmm. And you had Governor Scott come in and absolutely obliterate citizens to the point where that if you go on citizens, you're paying so much more because it's only insuring the most at risk. And I think we all understand how, you know, basic insurance works. You know, you're going to have someone who's sick and you need to make sure that you group them with a ton of, you know, younger, more likely to be healthy mm-hmm. people. And when mm-hmm. you just have sick people all lumped together, that does not work. And you're seeing the entire system collapse. And there's sometimes where markets just fail. There's going to be a point at which here soon where insurers all pull out because they simply cannot make any money. And I'm not someone that advocates for the government to step in, but when markets fail, and there are times that they do, there has to be a program there. And actually getting Citizens back to its, you know, 2006, 2007, 2008 levels where it was very healthy, where it had, you know, obviously more at risk insurance properties, but also healthy ones mm-hmm. so that it kept, you know, reasonable policies for the holders that had it. Getting back there and investing in citizens is what we need to do.
So how was it actually, what was the mechanism by which Governor Scott dismantled it or weakened it?
So you basically had to opt back in to choosing to be on citizens rather than continuing on every year. You had to opt back in. And anytime you put an opt-in button, you're going to lose a lot of people. And that's more or less how they were able to unroll citizens over a few years' time.
So it was like a slow drain. Was yes, that at the yeah. Okay. So was that at the behest of insurance lobbyists who wanted a piece of the Florida market?
I think that's a pretty good guess. Yeah, if you look at the donations go. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So I focus a lot on local government on the radio show. And one of the things we've seen from the state legislature on a scale never seen before is preemption of home rule mm-hmm. in different arenas. I'm just going to mention two, but you know, there are others. Campaign finance rules. Yep. The state abrogated local campaign finance rules, whereas like in the city of Sarasota, there is in our local charter, our local constitution, a limit of $200 for a donation that had to come from an actual breathing human being And now the limit is the same as the state for, so you can, any company, any LLC can give $1,000 to a city commission candidate. And $1,000 is a heck of a lot more than 200. Another example, Key West, and they had certain agreements with cruise ships and are finding that those agreements are really killing them because these people come in off the cruise ships. They actually don't buy much from the local stores. They create a ton of trash. They don't actually eat in the restaurants, but they're very disruptive to the flow of commerce and life. And so the police presence they have to pay for and the sanitation presence is pretty major, and it's killing them. But the governor stepped in and told them, no, you have to honor those contracts. You cannot create any new limits or laws about this. Again, where is that respect for small government and local government? Are there any that jump out at you that, well, we could certainly talk about SB 90, the elections legislation. I don't know how you account for that change. I'm curious about your take on it, and how would you, as likely to be, who knows, but you know, in the minority party, how would you seek to address any of that?
So let me first say that most of my family are Republicans or former Republicans. Mm-hmm. And when I was growing up, I would always ask them, you know, why are we Republicans? And they would tell me, you know, we believe those closest to the issue are in the best place to solve it. And the Republican Party used to believe in that. And you see that no longer exists. You have government edicts from Tallahassee now deciding how every municipality throughout the state is going to work. And this is one of the votes that my opponent couldn't answer and didn't even remember she made at Tiger Bay, that she voted to preempt Sarasota County School Board starting July 1st of this year on whether new schools coming in would be decided by the school board. They no longer are starting July 1st of this year. Now, some liberal representing Orlando and some conservative representing Jacksonville and Tallahassee now decides what is best for Sarasota County schools and what schools will come in.
Are so you this talking is one, about charter schools? Or
yes. Anytime a charter school comes in now, Tallahassee decides instead of our school board. And my opponent voted for that preemption, and she didn't even remember she did. And I'm someone that believes that those closest to the issue, like I said, growing up, are in the best place to solve it. And I'm not going to, in Tallahassee, tell local governments what they're going to do. And you see it on Siesta Key. Again, Republicans that used to say, I'm small government, let those closest to the issue decide. You have them telling people on Siesta Key they can't incorporate. You know, if you don't live on Siesta Key, why do you care? If you believe in democracy, let those closest to the issue actually address it. And you see that Republicans do not believe in that because it's driven by power. And they see if local municipalities, you know, want to do something that disagrees with largely them and their donors, let's be honest here, they're not going to allow it. So it's not only just bad policy, it's anti-democratic for people that claim they believe in freedom and democracy.
Is Siesta Key part of your district?
It is. It is.
Okay. And what are you hearing from those folks? Because I do remember they met with the state legislators. So I know it was Fiona McFarlane, Joe Gruters, a couple of others. And it was a split vote, you know, which I always honestly, in terms of who was going to support their incorporation, you know, I once heard a term called token opposition, but there can be token support. If the legislators know how the vote's going to go, they can vote the way they want in front of their constituents and not upset the powers that be who are going to prevail anyway. I wondered if some of that was going on. What is the vibe on Siesta Key regarding your race? Are they paying attention? It's going to be important for them if they're serious about incorporating.
Yeah, so this is where You know, I understand where they're coming from, but I really think just like Fiona sold out our children, our seniors and rape victims, she's going to do the same exact thing to Siesta Key. That 3-3 vote was manufactured so that, you know, that vote would be decided after the election. And what's going to happen is the governor is going to veto it, even if one flips. And that's simply just what's going to happen. They're just trying to scare Siesta Key voters into voting for Fiona McFarland. When she, again, she has shown time and time again, whether it is our children in our schools, seniors by cutting their CNA care time by 20%, whether it is selling out rape victims, it's all just about power. And she does not represent us. And this is my biggest fear when I talk to voters on Siesta Key. They really do believe that, hey, if we vote for Fiona, she's going to have our back and she's going to pass this. And I guarantee you, regardless of the results of my election, it's just not going to happen. The governor and Republicans will not allow it. I will fight for it and I will do everything in my power to do it. But just like she sold out those constituencies, she's going to sell out the voters on Siesta Key. And it's unfortunate.
Well, let's talk now about one of the biggest issues, certainly in the country. And I believe it'll be an issue for women in Florida, is abortion. You know, that women in this country since 1973 have had a right to decide for themselves about whether or not to continue a pregnancy. And, you know, I think a lot of people, there are a lot of people who aren't happy at the idea of abortion. They know that it's a sad and wrenching decision. But, you know, I'm talking about the people who put it kind of over the edge, because I think it's like 75% of people in this country support a woman's right to choose. And they don't do it because they're like, woohoo, it's no big deal. You know, this is highly personal. It's highly private. And we've got to let people decide this for themselves. Tell me about your position. I know I pretty much know how you feel, but so our listeners understand, what is your take on this? There's a ban now after 15 weeks. What would you support? What would you fight for? Do you see it?
Let me clarify that my opponent not only voted for the 15-week abortion ban, but there was an amendment to that 15-week ban that was put up to try to make it less worse, because they knew it was going to pass. And it would have exempted victims of rape and incest from the 15 weeks. And Fiona McFarland voted against that, allowing exemptions for rape victims. And
not,
look,
you mean not allowing?
There not are allowing, no, I'm sorry. Yeah, no exceptions for rape victims. And, you know, again, I'm just going to use the governor's own words. He says, we live in the free state of Florida. If you can't control your own body, you don't live in a free country. And I have a 17-year-old sister. I have a 17-year-old niece. And it is simply unacceptable to think that they are going to live in a state, in a country where my mother had more rights in her life than they will have in theirs. It's simply unacceptable. And when you look at, again, rape victims who already had their bodily autonomy and sovereignty taken away from by their attacker, and then you're going to have the government do the exact same thing and say, you're not going to be able to control your body this second time and make this decision. And you are seeing instances throughout the country of, I most recently read about this scenario. What happens if a mother just found out that her 13 or 14-year-old daughter was raped, and she found out because she's showing at 16 weeks? Fiona,
which is actually not, you know, that's not some strange hypothetical. The, you know, girls who are young victims will be in denial, will be traumatized. Their bodies may, you know, they really may not know. And then by the time it's evident, it's longer than, you know, 12 or 15 weeks.
And like you said, this isn't, you know, no one's cheering, you know, for this circumstance to happen to a woman, no matter the time and place this takes place. this decision, regardless of how it gets there, it's a very, very difficult decision for a woman. But the whole idea is it is her decision and she should have the choice. We live in a country that we talk about freedom because you have the choice to choose to do whatever you want. Again, when we look at all the freedoms we have, it is choices and you should have the choice to control your own body. I don't believe a government bureaucrat in Tallahassee should be making decisions about your body. I just don't think they should. I think you should make the decisions about your body. And that's what I'm always going to advocate for in Tallahassee after I win.
Okay. So public health, regarding abortion, we've heard you on that one. What about Medicaid expansion? Since Rick Scott, we have not had full Medicaid benefits in the state of Florida. And where do you stand on that? What do you think the state legislature's role is in working to expand Medicaid? It seems like if you're for improving people's lives, that would be a pretty easy place to begin.
Yeah, and what people don't understand is a lot of the people that would qualify for Medicaid, they are working people. These are not handouts. These are to make sure working people who work really hard, 60, 70, 80 hours a week, that they have health insurance. And I really don't think it's that much, especially, again, my mother, single mother of four, was a waitress. I don't think it's insane that if you work 60, 70, 80 hours a week in this country, that you shouldn't have the ability to get health insurance. I really don't think it's that insane.
Yeah. Well, I've always wondered too. I mean, when you look at infant mortality rates, if we want to give children the best start in life, employers like Walmart, actually their employees, many of them, I've seen, studies showing they are on Medicaid. So, sometimes these employers are using government health plans because they don't pay a living wage and they don't provide, benefits. But Medicaid expansion seems like a pretty easy way to, accept the federal funding. And it actually would increase employment. There'd be jobs around.
And it's important you point out that we're already paying for it. We're just not getting the benefits of it. Mm-hmm. Again, that is not being fiscally responsible of paying into the system and then not allowing your citizens to be able to collect on what they paid into the system for. It's just not fiscally responsible.
Yeah. What do you see, there's a plan for this highway to nowhere, this highway that goes through the state of Florida. I don't know that we need another highway. We certainly could use better public transportation. Rick Scott denied federal funding for a high-speed rail between Tampa and Orlando. And I remember talking to a business leader years later. It was clear to me at the time, this was around 2010, and Tea Party activists were very eager and they helped him get into office to not accept that funding because they were taking a fiscally conservative approach, they believed, and just saying, no, we don't want to do this. But, it seems to me that there are wise ways to invest and wise ways, to improve. Have you thought much about Florida's public transportation?
I have. And this is a really difficult question because we have built our entire, transportation system on cars. And so it's really hard to start making a patchwork system to slowly move away from this. Even when you look at, Mount Street, that shouldn't, the waterfront right there shouldn't be a road. It's just poorly planned development where we take away some of the best views where people should be walking and hanging out, but no, there's a road there. So I really do think this takes a comprehensive approach and finding transportation experts. How can we utilize the infrastructure we currently have and slowly make that to alternative forms of infrastructure? And I wish I had a magic, again, with like affordable housing overnight, fix everything. But this really is a decades long investment. talking with people who know infrastructure incredibly well, and how can we slowly make this transition to public transportation without obviously uprooting our entire transportation system that in Florida, we're getting so many people that is already problematic.
Yeah. Well, Derek Rich, we're at the close of our time. I want to thank you so much for joining me today. If you are looking to vote in November, and if you listen to this show, you better be looking to vote. We're depending on everyone participating, right? This is how our democracy thrives. You must register by Tuesday, October 11th to vote in the November 8th general election, which includes the race for U.S. Senate, Florida governor, state legislature, your race, Rich, Derek, as well as county and city offices. Early voting begins October 24th and continues through November 6th. All requests for a vote by mail ballot must be received no later than 5 p.m. on October 29th to allow ample time for mailing and return. Guidelines for requesting vote by mail ballots and registration are available at sarasotavotes.gov and votemanatee.gov. Everyone, you have been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Derek Rich, thank you so much for joining me. Quickly, where do people go if they want to find out more about your campaign?
Thank you so much. And it is DerekForTheSuncoast.com, DerekFor, TheSuncoast.com. And thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Make it a great day.